This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, I can't make them all, but I sure try to make all the magic conventions that I can, and certainly there are a lot of conventions happening around the world all the time. I try to make the major ones as best I can. However, I was unable to make it to the Genie Conjurers Convention, and it is going on right now, and this happens to be October the 3rd. And since I'm not there, I do have one of my representatives who was there with a microphone handy, who happened to catch a great interview with John Archer from England, who was one of the performers and lecturers at this year's Genie Convention. He sat down for about a half hour to talk a little bit about comedy and the difference between comedy in England versus in the United States, and also the popularity of magic on television in the UK versus here, and kind of the ebbs and flows and what it is that seems to be more popular in one season versus another one, whether it's going to be a street performer versus someone that's going to be actually a stage performer, and comedy magicians. Anyhow, very interesting. And so Fred King is one of the friends of the Magic Word, who is a financial supporter and also someone who is a longtime listener to the Magic Word podcast. And so, again, he had his microphone with him. And thanks to Fred, I appreciate him actually taking some time, and also to John Archer for taking his time to sit down and chat and record this conversation that you're going to get to hear now on the Magic Word podcast.
Hello, this is Fred King reporting for Scott Wells and the Magic Word Podcast from the Genie Convention, the Conjuring Convention in Orlando, Florida. It's been a great convention so far. Everybody seems to be having a great time, and I'm privileged to be here with one of the star performers, someone who has got more awards than I could possibly name. I just muck it up. But I know that he's an Inner Magic Circle member with Gold Star. I know that he's won Comedy Performer of the Year from several organizations. I'm happy to be sitting down with Mr. John Archer. Hello, John.
Hello there. Good to be here.
Yes. So John has been working hard, and we're now in the Saturday night heading towards a big gala show. John did a one-man show on... I believe that was Thursday night.
Thursday night was the one-man show. Friday night, the lecture.
The lecture. And I can just say, as somebody who's been a fan from afar and owns his DVDs and such, he just absolutely killed. People were rolling in the aisles. It was just spectacular to see live. So, John, what are your thoughts on the convention so far?
I've loved it. I think it's a really good convention. I've been hanging out with Noel Britton, who's also from the UK. And we were just talking just earlier today, sort of saying that there hasn't been one weak thing, really. It's just, you know, sometimes you go to a convention and you... And the other thing, which is sometimes hard at a convention, there's been nothing where you thought, well, I'll skip that and I'll go around the dealers. There's been nothing I've wanted to skip. And I rarely sort of... I don't go to as many conventions as I used to, and a lot of the conventions I go to I get paid to be at now. But I think if I'd paid and just come here as a punter, for want of a better word, you know, just somebody who's coming here to attend, then I'd have been very happy. Really, you know, really have had a good time. It's been some great stuff.
I would think that Richard would be very happy, but that's sort of the ultimate compliment, I would think, for a convention. Now, as you know, this was the one-time-only convention never to be repeated, and yet here we are. So now, do you get over across the pond that often these days, or because I've been to a lot of conventions in Vegas, for example, and I've never had the pleasure of running
into
you
before. I've done Mindvention before, and I've done the Texas Association, I've done Abbott's, I've got Defectors once, but I don't get over a lot. I'd like to get over more, but you know, whenever, I know what it's like if you're booking a convention and you're booking overseas acts, it's, you don't have a lot of choice. So, you know, there's not a lot of scope to bring lots of UK acts over. But I try and come across and do the Magic Castle now and again when I can. I've done that four or five times now. So I love performing over here in the States, because you are a much... I mean, it sounds a bit patronising, but you're a nicer audience than a British audience. British audiences are hard work, which is a good thing when you're developing your skills as a comedian, because you you know, you have to work a little bit harder. But it can be annoying sometimes that, you know, every time you get in front of them, it's like they always have that attitude of convince us that you're worth laughing at first. Whereas American audience sort of give you a bit of love right at the start, and they seem to take less warming up, really. I don't know. So I love performing over here. I absolutely love it.
That's great. Now, back in the day, I think there was some talk about, well, maybe Americans don't quite get dry British humor and things like that. Do you think that the, getting BBC America here and being exposed to so many things like The Office, so many shows that started in Britain and then have been migrated to the U.S., do you think that's kind of trained U.S. audiences to be a little more receptive to your type of humor?
Possibly so. I've never really found a problem with the humour translating as such. The big problem is, of course, phraseology, you know, the words and idioms that we would use that don't translate. And I still fall into that trap of, of saying taps instead of faucet and pavement instead of sidewalk and things like that. And I do know a lot of them, and I can sort of translate in my head as I'm going on. But now and again, I miss it, and I realize. I think last night I did something
there
like.
There was one phrase I remember.
I said I'd like to give you one to the guy who's helping. And in England, I give you one means, you know, you're going to have sex with them. And I sort of said, I'd like to give you one. And then I realized what I said, and I said, I don't mean give you one. And I realized the audience hadn't picked up on it at all. And I just sort of went, oh, that's obviously an English phrase that doesn't translate. And I think I said that out loud. But I think the more you perform over here, the better you get. And also, I speak quite fast, as you can tell. And slowing down is something I try and do. Or just not necessarily slow down too much, but just be a little bit clearer. Because I realized that, you know, you're not picking up on the voice sometimes. So
yeah, I remember one of my experiences over there was when I was with a gentleman named Randall. I said, "Hey, you're Randy," and I had no idea what.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah. That's
there
right.
is,
yeah, yeah.
You know, the Queen's English is a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah,
that,
definitely.
So where exactly? Just for the, I know you've spoken with Scott in the past and such, but for people that may not be more familiar with you, where in England do you call home?
I'm from the northeast of England, so I mean, if you don't know England very well, you probably won't know it. But it's about 250 miles north of London, so I'm about 4.5 hours away driving, and it's on the northeast sort of northeast coast. It's if you know England at all, it's sort of between York and Newcastle.
Okay,
are the two major places you may have heard of.
My father's from Gravesend.
So, all right, okay, yeah.
And although I can never remember what side of the river he's supposed to be, I don't know if he's a man of Kent or a Kentish man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then my relatives are also from Scotland up near Musselburgh and Inveress, just over the border that near Edinburgh. So slightly familiar.
Yeah.
Now, as I understand, many people may not know, but you were a policeman, a constable for a number of years?
I was a police officer for 10 years. But that's... it'll be 20 years next year that I've been out of the police force. So
you've been doing this much longer
This is the job I've had most of my life. And then police officer was the other thing I had for 10 years, obviously.
How did that influence maybe your perspective on life or your comedy or your magic in any way, knowing people on those kinds of levels? Or
do you know what? I don't know whether it influenced. It certainly was good training because, obviously, being a police officer, being able to deal with situations, awkward situations, going into a bar late at night where there's been a brawl or some sort of trouble, and sometimes you're the only one there and you have to go in and deal with all these people and placate them and sort the situation out. So that's certainly a good skill, I think. Just people skills. I mean, policing is about good people skills.
Right.
And so I think, yeah, I probably learned a lot from that. But also when I was in the police, to be honest, they ended up using my skills of comedy and magic. And I did 5 years out of that 10. I was school liaison officer.
Okay.
So they had me going into schools, talking to kids about, you know, drugs and stranger danger and road safety and a host of other things. And I would use comedy and magic when I was in the schools talking to the kids. So really that was almost like I was getting free performance experience and getting paid for it as a police officer. I was still doing other police work as well, but So I got a lot of experience from it, really.
So your magic and comedy background predated you entering the force, so to speak?
About the same time, sort of just before I was joining the police force. I got married around about the same time as I joined, and I was in bands, really. I played guitar and I sang in a few bands and duos, and magic was my hobby then, and I started doing, you know, just bits of comedy between the songs. As I was introducing a song, I'd make a joke or I'd chat to somebody in the audience and do the next song. And then, I started introducing tricks into the music set. And, you know, I was in a duo with a guy and I said, I'd love to do a card trick tonight, you know, between the songs. And I did, and then it just built up. And eventually I went solo. And for a while my career was... I was still in the police, but my performance was very much I was a singer, guitarist who did comedy and magic as well. And then the music sort of faded out until I wasn't doing any music, and it just became comedy and magic. And it's only recently, in the last, I would say, maybe 5 or 6 years, that I've introduced music back in with the ukulele.
Right, and that was, I think everybody really enjoyed that. And it was, like I said, when you see somebody with a known skill then demonstrate another skill, it's always a little bit of a step back.
Yeah, well, for me, it was sort of, it was because I love it. And my kids bought me a ukulele for Christmas. I've got two sons and a daughter, and my two sons both play guitar. And all my guitars sort of vanished from my room and appeared in their rooms. And so I didn't have a guitar anymore. They're married now and moved off. But so they bought me a ukulele for Christmas 1 year. And I just thought it was really fun to play, and I thought I'd love to put it in the act. And it was sort of just to give me... a USP, like a unique selling point, mm-hmm. was, you know, he's a comedy magician who has a ukulele. In the same way that Jay Marshall had Lefty, right. You know, I just thought, I want to have something that when people describe me, they go, who's he? And they go, you know, he's the guy who does the ukulele. Ah, yeah. So that was it, really. And then, I introduced it just for the silly songs, and then I decided, actually, I want to try and do something that's actually nice with the ukulele. So, I have various endings, a classical ukulele piece and a few different songs that I sometimes sing. I'll only ever do one at the end, but there's a few different pieces I finish with.
You know, it came across, I mean, that you were obviously skilled and had singing capability. I was a bass player, so any instrument
that's almost a musician.
The least talented guy, you get the bass.
Yeah, you're just above a drummer.
Yeah, well, my brother was a drummer. But what I'm saying is any instrument more than four strings, I think you're just showing off.
Well, the ukulele's only got four, so we're all
exactly,
good.
That's what I'm saying. That's the way to go. So let's talk a little bit about... it seems like magic goes in waves a little bit. You uh-huh. know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, you had the Darren Brown, and then that was followed by who's the young kid?
Dynamo
and all that stuff. You know, prior to that, we had the David Blaine wave and the Chris Angel wave, and then we fell into this lull over here, and there was no magic on TV or whatever. And then Britain had a very vibrant, you had the Magicians, you had the original Penn and Teller Fools, which, of course, in case anybody out there is not aware, John Archer was the first contestant to actually fool, as you said, not Penn and Teller, but Penn, because that's all
fool
that matters.
Fool Teller, impressed Penn, Fool Teller,
Also had what was the other show that was going? But like I said, Darren Brown was doing specials.
But we had a lull before that. We had the similar lull you had. Sort of Paul Daniels sort of vanished from the TV scene, and we had a lull really where you couldn't get on television doing magic. Nobody could. And now we've had a resurgence, and it's quite healthy again. Not a lot of big stars on TV other than Dynamo and. Darren, really. I mean, there's a few, but there's lots of people who are doing little things here and there, and it's certainly popular again.
So when you, and like I say, we now are in a bit of resurgence, which I think is due, my opinion at least, is, you know, originally on America's Got Talent, you know, we had Simon Cowell, we had Piers Morgan, Brits, by the way, right?
And
they did not care for magic.
No,
and
Simon Cowell hates it.
They tended to make the magicians look stupid.
Yeah.
And then when they finally... turn things over, had Sharon Osbourne in there and some of the current ones there. They were a little more receptive to that.
Yeah.
They started showcasing a few magicians, all that. And now we've got, you know, we had Wizard Wars over here. We've got our own Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
Matt Frankel.
Carbonara Effect.
Exactly. Beautiful show. He's brilliant, isn't he?
Yeah. We've just literally just finished watching it.
Had you ever seen the shaving cream thing?
I'd never seen that. And Nola told me about it and said, yeah, this is really good.
He's
I loved
wild,
it.
Yeah.
Really nice.
So it looks like we're cresting now. Maybe we're getting to the point where we're going to have a little bit of saturation. You've been well known as, you know, certainly in the islands over there and to some degree over here. When you won the Penn and Teller thing,
yeah.
Was that just a blip on your career, or was it a big deal over there?
It wasn't a massive deal, but it certainly made a little bit of a difference. Not television wise, really. The thing is, we've got there's a resurgence of TV magic, but it's not the type of magic I do really. We haven't really got. I don't think the TV channels are interested in a stand-up comedy magician. They're interested in street magic, and they're interested in sort of heavier, deeper, you know, Darren
right.
type stuff. I'd hope that would change, you know. I mean, the thing is, you know, I'm getting on now, so it might be that it you know, there is a change and it's some young guy who's doing the comedy magic. I mean, and there are some good young comedy magicians in the UK who are doing great stuff, but it's not really the type of magic that's going on.
But, and yet it's maybe not on TV, but it's enormously audience pleasing, right? I mean, you know,
yeah,
I'm
I mean,
sure
I'm
that
busy,
you
I'm
work,
busy.
Work
I'm, you know, I'm working certainly as much as I want to, and you know, I've got no complaints. I love it. It, you know, it's not like it doesn't feel like a job. It feels like I'm just having fun and getting paid for it. So I'm not complaining, you know, and doing coming over and doing conventions and hanging out with friends and. You know, it's a great life. So if I've got as far as I'm ever going to get, then I'm not going to complain. But, of course, I'm always going to keep trying and doing other things to see what happens.
Well, after having to, you know, be on the police force and, like you say, walk into a bar in a dangerous situation, getting up in front of the stage and with the lights and having a heckler or whatever, that's nothing, right?
Yeah,
you can do that
in
your sleep now.
Exactly.
So.
I don't mind hecklers. And also, I don't mind, I think when you're a comedy magician, or certainly when you do comedy, you have to not be afraid of having a death anyway. You have to go out there thinking, well, if I, you know, if they absolutely hate me and boo me off stage, I don't care. I can cope with it. And I think that's part of the process of getting experience is having those moments so that you lose the fear of them. It's like a boxer. You know, a boxer needs to get punched
a few times. Right.
And once he realizes, actually, it doesn't matter if I get punched. You know, once a boxer's been knocked out, he realizes it's not that scary, you know. And it's the same for comics. You've got to realize it doesn't matter. And once you realize that, you have a different type of confidence. It's not a pretend confidence. It's a real confidence.
Yeah, one of the things I think is particularly unique about your style. There's a lot of talent, a lot of comics that go out there and kind of go after an audience member, all that. But somehow, you know, as tough as you are on them, there's a certain gentleness behind it, and they go with it. They don't seem to. I'm sure occasionally, maybe you hit somebody a little too hard. It's hard to judge.
Yeah,
I've had a
few occasions where the person hasn't been happy with me picking on them. But you know what? They are very, very few and far between. I can probably think of two occasions that I could actually quote where it's happened. More common is somebody else getting offended on their behalf because they don't realise they're happy with it.
Right.
So somebody who's sat 10 rows back comes up to me and says, I don't think you should have picked on them. But the truth is I do try to do it in a way that they realise it's comedy, and I try and do it in a way that they realise I don't mean it. You know, I try to do it with a bit of a, you know, twinkle in my eye and a smile in my voice.
That comes across, I think. So.
Yeah, and most people say that to me. They say you manage to do it without feeling like you're offending them.
Right.
But it's a fine line, and comedy's like that. Comedy, you can offend people with comedy for all sorts of reasons, not just for picking on them.
Right.
You can offend them because of what you say, how you say it, you know, the language you use. I don't particularly swear on stage or anything, but, you know, language can offend people.
Sure.
So when you're doing comedy, You are always running the risk of offending people, and if you worry about not offending them, then you end up being a bit wishy washy and you know, soft.
Not all that funny sometimes.
Sometimes it can pull you away from being sharp, because I think you need to be sometimes a bit edgy.
Right. Are there any so what's in the future for here? Are there any products or appearances or anything you want to make people aware of possibly?
Not really. I'm gigging. Most of my gigs that I do in the UK, I'm booked privately or they're for corporates or things like that. So not things that can advertise. As soon as I get back, I'm touring with a stand-up comedian from the UK. So we're doing it's the second half of his national tour, and I do half an hour support at the start of that. So we're doing that for the whole of October, and then I'm just working really. Next year, I'm hoping to do a Penguin lecture.
Have you done a Penguin or is it at the table?
I did a Murphy's at the table last year. I'm going to do a Penguin one with a few newer things and some of my old stuff as well, and also just a lot of my thoughts on, you know, creativity and everything else.
That's the nice thing of those lectures. They kind of let you go on and on, and I find sometimes the, you know, rather than just learning tricks, that other information, the insights, the lessons learned are sometimes the most valuable parts. Your map book test, I love that.
Oh, streets,
it's just that in, I don't know how much longer people even recognize what a guidebook is. We're all so electric.
Yeah, you've got to talk about them, what they are, but yeah.
But no, I think that's brilliant, and it's a nice spin on the book test, and I'm all about wanting to have some kind of motivation for things, all this stuff. And that is, like you said, one of the more motivated book tests out there.
It was funny because I did the lecture last night, and Derek Hughes and Chad Long both went and got one straight away.
Oh, really?
So,
Brilliant.
I think what they hadn't realised and what some people don't realise is they think it's a London book. You know, it's a London guidebook. And with having the London and the Boston one and then introducing another one from another country, it can just be it's international. So people were saying, oh, well, I'm from America and it's an English book. But it's not. No, we've got the Boston and the London one now. And I, like you say, I do think it's very, it justifies using a book. You can't ask them to think of a random place in a city unless they've got a way of checking out and finding one.
And it's very graphic. It's colorful. Yeah. Like you say, when you do most book tests, you have to go, well, get an interesting word, something more than three. So you put all these conditions on it, whereas you say, pick a street.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's very clean and all that.
Yeah.
And I can personally attest to how entertaining and useful your educating Archer.
Oh, right.
And the further education. Now, this is one of those things where people say, I don't like to, DVDs, you copy. Nobody can copy you, but what I'm saying is I think by watching those, they're very inspiring, and the creativity, things like Collard and all that stuff, and of course your blank.
I've got a new version of Collard, hopefully coming out with Vanishing Ink. Well, they've said that we're going to bring it out, and it's a thing that Levent worked on and got in touch with me and said, I've started doing Collard, this is the way I'm doing it. And he was using the same principle, but a different handling. And a slightly different method, and we sort of corresponded over email for a while, and we got this new method, which is it's still the same effect, still the same story and patter, but the method is so much easier and so much cleaner now. So that will be out hopefully sometime next year.
Well, that's something to look for. This is Scott calls this the Magic Word Podcast, and of course he always wants to ask somebody, what is your magic word? What is your phrase or credo or something you live your life by? What in your case, John, would you say is your magic word or phrase?
If you
had to pin it down to just something small and short?
Do you know what? I don't know. I think I could probably come up with a different one every. If you asked me this question in an hour's time, it would probably be different. And again, in an hour's time. I think loving what you do is really important. And the other thing, which sounds really corny, and I hate sounding corny, but I do think you've got to love the audience. I think I sometimes see acts go out and I think they really don't want to be there, or they really don't care. And I think you have to genuinely, I sang that crazy love song at the end of my show, and telling the audience I'm falling in love with them. And it's not true, I haven't really fallen in love with them, but I do love the audience. I do genuinely want to make them happy. I genuinely want to make them laugh. I want them to love me back. And I think you've got to have that sort of thought, especially when you're doing comedy. Comedy so much relies on people liking you. Before they can start laughing with you.
Right, they say the first couple of seconds, if they don't like you,
you're kind of
the funniest jokes in the world.
Right. You've got to be likable, I think. Right. And if you love the audience, I think that they'll spot that.
Right.
right. if you genuinely can love them.
Well, that's brilliant. I hope you felt some of the love coming from the audience last night because it was sincere.
No, it was
and
lovely,
I was in
yeah.
there, and I really enjoyed that. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to
no
talk
problem.
With us. I know you're going to head off to dinner now. It's been a real pleasure.
No problem. And
best
and
of
thank
luck.
You, Scott. Thank you, Scott, wherever you are.
Yeah, hopefully he's fine. I think he just had a conflict. It's so unlike him not to make a major convention.
Yeah,
so,
no,
for Scott Wells and the Magic Word, we'll see you some other day. Good night.
Wow. Great job, Fred. I appreciate you taking the time to interview John Archer. And, John, I thank you very much for taking some time to talk with Fred and so the listeners can learn a little bit more about comedy in England and a little bit about your history as well. That was just a wonderful snippet and also a great opportunity for some of the listeners to get a little insight of what's going on right now at the Genie Conjurers Convention in Orlando, Florida. Sorry I couldn't be there, but this has been a special presentation. And I thank you for listening. And until next time, this is Scotty out.